If you are ready to change the way people experience the transition to parenthood, you've come to the right place. On this podcast, we interview postpartum professionals, academics and researchers, as well as parents with unique perspectives on postpartum. Whether you've been working with new families for decades or are brand new to postpartum care, we'd love you to join us. I'm your host, Julia Jones.
Hello and welcome to Newborn Mothers Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Claire Tonti, who is a singer-songwriter and also a podcaster. Claire and I met at a sort of a creative business retreat and really connected because we both talk a lot about motherhood in our work, and I know that's definitely informed your work. Claire's first album is out now and it's called Matrescence, which probably says it all.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm very happy to have you. Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit and how you kind of came to writing an album about matrescence?
Yeah, sure. So I've got two little kids, three and he's eight now, so a boy and a girl. And the start of 2022, I had a baby during the pandemic, my daughter. I'd been running a podcast business with my husband, and I just became really unwell with long COVID. So I think I had postnatal depression as well, which is a funny road into why I started writing an album. But I think a lot of mums can relate to this. I just had nothing left in the tank. I think since I had my son when he was, he's eight now, 8 years ago, I'd experienced quite a lot of birth trauma, now I know in hindsight, and some perinatal mental health struggles through that too. But I just sort of pushed it down and kept working and kept building this business. And I used to be a teacher before that, so I was just running through my adrenaline stores, I think, as well. And at the start of 2022, when I got long COVID, I couldn't even watch TV. Like, the light was too bright. I just hit the lowest point probably I've been. And I started resting a lot. That was all I could really do. I started seeing a naturopath and my GP, and they just said, look, parent, and that's probably all you can do. And I had to stop working, which was just so unlike me. I'm usually really busy. And because of that, I started kind of having a lot of time to think, just, you know, in that stillness, other than in parenting, I couldn't, you know, do anything else. And so I started remembering what I loved most about creativity and myself, really, was when I was in my 20s and I was singing. And I had developed this cough because of long COVID. And as a podcaster, you can't really have a cough while you're interviewing people. And so I lied to myself, I think, and said, I'll get a singing teacher as something gentle and restorative to do just for me for the first time in years. And she might help me with my cough and give me some breathing techniques. And so I went to see her. Her name's Bianca, and she started helping me to develop my voice and work on some breath work. And then in that stillness, when I was resting a lot after the kids had gone to bed, I started songwriting. So I put one song on Instagram and she saw it and she said to me, you're a songwriter, did you know, and what are you going to do with it? And I said, I'm not, and I barely have any energy in the tank to, like, do the parenting I need to do and show up for my family. But then she reminded me, and I think it's so true, that as mothers, we often put everyone else's needs before our own. And actually creativity seems like it should be the lowest priority, but actually it can be the thing that can ultimately be really healing and help us to find a little window of time into ourselves. And so that first song I wrote was called This Mother Thing. And the other thing, actually, I should say, before all of that as well, I went to a Kindred Women's Circle, and my friend Erin was running. It's the first time I'd ever been to a women's circle. And she gave us journals and said, write down something you want to call into your life. And on that, in that journal I wrote, I want to bring in music. And then on the next page are the first lyrics to my song. And then this is kind of skipping ahead, but sort of over the course of that year, I was connected with a music producer called Ezekiel, and then we started developing these songs, and it quickly became 11 songs, some of which two I'd written in my early 20s and I reimagined for this record, But I had no idea that I was going to perform them anywhere or release them as an album. I didn't think I was writing an album about motherhood. I just thought I was writing an album about what I felt. And it's so strange now to look back at it, because each song has kind of an aspect of the struggles that women go through, the women in my life I could see going through, as well as myself, around identity and, you know, birth trauma and figuring out how to be this person. And then I was Googling around for something to call it and just stumbled on the word matrescence. I had no idea about any of it. It was really new to me when we met at that retreat. And I just saw the definition, you know, the process of becoming a mother, kind of blew my mind. I hadn't realized it was actually a world of activists and people who were really interested in the scientific theory behind what happens when we become mothers. And then when I started looking at those themes and that word and the work of some people like Amy Telekabaz and even yourself too, in the conversations we had at that retreat, I suddenly realized that this music I'd been writing was that exact thing, the way that my brain had changed, my body, my heart, my spirit, my perspective on the world, that kind of all-consuming love you have for your kids. There's a song in there called Lullaby, which I wrote as a love song to my kids that came out really quickly in like 20 minutes. But it's about wanting to accept them for who they are. They don't have to be perfect or good. I'll just love them always. But then the flip side of that motherhood journey, where in this mother thing, like, there's a lyric in there that says, will you go but also stay? Will you grow but also never change? And that, to me, in a nutshell, is the complexity of motherhood. It's like this all-consuming love and exhaustion, and can you also leave me alone so I can, you know, do some stuff by myself? And then you do that, and then you miss them, and then you worry that you're not good enough, and, you know, it's so layered. I just think there should be whole giant cathedrals dedicated to art made by women at this time, because it's so rich in complexity.
Yeah, and what is such an interesting observation for me, having hundreds of these conversations, is that so many mothers have that experience that you had, where it just like pours out of them. They live that experience, and then they realize that everyone else is experiencing that too. But that just shows you how much, as a society and as a culture, we don't really embrace those voices. We really diminish that experience of motherhood and don't really allow it to be heard, because everyone has that experience and goes, am I the only one?
It's so true. And I think that's something I really noticed, what I thought was just my stuff, particularly around, for me, I wrote a song called Self, which is about birth trauma and breastfeeding challenges and the expectations of others. And I was so shocked by the way I was treated in the system, but I thought it was me. I thought it was just me, that I couldn't breastfeed, and I tried so hard. And the advice that I got from everyone was just keep feeding, just try harder. You should be better at this. Feed every 2 hours, then pump, then give them formula. He's not putting on weight. Well, it must be your fault. And when I said, well, when do I sleep? And the advice is kind of, well, you don't, you just push through it until it works, and it will, because the advice that I got from the terrible kind of parenting advice that I got through the hospital when I did my birthing classes that first time round was all women can breastfeed, some can't, just hack the pain. And I, as a good student, I remember writing that down at 29. I had no other friends who had kids, and so I just thought, if I try as hard as I can, of course it will work. And as I know now, there are a million different ways that women end up feeding their babies. There's a million different reasons why it can be challenging. I now know there's a thing called hyperplasia, which means you might not have enough mammary tissue to produce enough milk. Your baby's mouth might not be the right shape. There's so many different factors that go into it, your mental health as well, and also depletion. So because I'd experienced such significant birth trauma, I'd lost so much blood. I was so iron deficient, but no one picked any of that up. And so I thought that was me. And then when I sing that song and the lyric is, but I'm bleeding, just try harder. You should be better at it all. Here, take all this shame. The amount of women who in the audience just burst into tears or write to me afterwards and say, yeah, that was me. I thought it was just me. And I tried, and no one said, actually, formula will be fine if that's what you need to do for you. And or just sort of wrap you up in this cocoon of love, which I really admire in your work. It's, you know, it's that caring for this newborn mother. This woman is just as new to this role as this baby is. And you need to be wrapped rather than kind of told you're not doing it well enough and isolated. And so in hindsight, now when I sing that song, the last lyric is about, you know, that this shame isn't yours to hold. Your body's born this way. You are beautiful and wonderfully made. And that's the message that I want all women and all parents, whoever you are, to know that you are wonderful, however your parenting goes in that journey. And we just need much more love and understanding and compassion for women. Because like the lyric to that, the first lyric to that song is, women at the start broken open now, thinking that she's failed. And I now know 1 in 3 women experience birth trauma in Australia, but I didn't know that statistic at the time. And I will say too, and this is part of the story I tell in my show, because I performed this for the first time in February this year to 200 people, having not performed in 15 years, and was so nervous. And at the end, I just burst into tears. Everyone stood up and gave me a standing ovation. And I was crying and they were crying. And we were all like, there were midwives in the room and women who'd supported each other through their own births, and women who I'd been parenting, you know, through the pandemic with as well. And we all just collectively were just like laughing and weeping about what we'd all been through. And it just, I don't even know where I'm going with this, I'm rambling now. It just made me realize that I'm in no way alone, and that we need to be doing better for mothers if, you know, where we find ourselves in this culture now. And it's not just here. I ended up touring the UK as well this year, and in through Scotland and into Ireland, and mothers all over the place, and healthcare professionals, midwives, doulas were all saying the same, that there was a lot happening in the system that affected women so greatly. And I would say too, I've met so many amazing midwives and doulas, but part of the reason I had birth trauma was that when I started labouring, I was in the hospital setting and I started singing into the pain. And as a singer, I'd repressed that part of me, but obviously my body, as we know, is very wise. And I now know that helps with the vagal nerve and like opening you up, right? Like your cervix actually looks a lot like your vocal cords if you see them in diagrams. And so I started singing, and this woman, this midwife, who I'm sure she thought she was doing the right thing, told me to be quiet and get back on the bed and stop making so much noise and you'll exhaust yourself. And so then what happened to me in that really fragile moment is my body shut down. I shut down. I felt really ashamed of the sound I was making. And I often think, how different it would have been if I'd been able to sing my son into the world, you know. And instead it was a pretty traumatic kind of entry for him, and I ended up with quite a lot of injuries. And so it's something I'm really passionate about now, the music, and I found so much joy in it, but also in this work of supporting and just talking more about why it's important that we give more mothers love through that process.
Can I just remind you a little bit, what was it that the hospital said to you? Everyone can breastfeed.
Some can't hack the pain.
Some can't hack the pain, which is such a reflection of our cultural attitude, really, isn't it, to everything, to birth, to mothering, you know, just put up with it, get on with it, stop complaining. And I think, you know, when you were saying that people do genuinely have sometimes there are genuine biological challenges around breastfeeding, but why we know that this is actually not an individual shame, it should actually be a societal shame, is because other countries don't have breastfeeding rates like ours. Some countries have breastfeeding rates of 30%, 50%, and some people have breastfeeding rates of like 90 or 98%. Mm. So there's very few women who couldn't breastfeed. It's not that they can't hack the pain. That's not the problem. The problem is they're not given the right support. They're traumatized, they're lonely, no one's teaching them how. These are all learned skills, and they also take a lot of time and energy, which you don't have if you've just lost lots of blood, you're experiencing depression, you haven't got anyone else who knows how to breastfeed, you know, showing you how. So yeah, we really need to change that narrative that it's an individual choice, you know, to thinking of it as a social responsibility. If so many women are struggling to breastfeed, what are we as a society doing wrong, you know?
It's true. I do also think that there is genetically as well, some women are gifted with more milk than others. I do genuinely see that. Just anecdotally, I'm not an expert, but I can see that some of my friends can fill whole fridges, and I spent hours and hours and hours trying and getting, you know, like 10 mils worth of milk.
Yes, but how much you pump is not reflective of how much your baby's getting. And that's, again, a really common misconception, because we trust like machines and bottles more than we trust our own bodies and our babies. But babies are much more efficient at the breast than breast pumps. So the fact that you can't pump much doesn't mean that your baby's not able to drink much. It can be completely unrelated. So, you know, there's just so much that undermines our feelings about women's bodies that, you know, that we don't, we just have this basic assumption that they're wrong or broken or that they won't work, you know, rather than the basic assumption that if we cared for mums, if they were healthy and happy and supported, it would be a lot easier, you know, a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey there, I'm interrupting this podcast to let you know that if you are really enjoying this episode, then you'll really enjoy our postpartum education and care professional training too. Our training is online and available worldwide. We've already trained nearly 2,000 students in 60 different countries, and we'd love you to join us. Wherever you are in your postpartum career, taking your first step, or with decades of experience, if you feel a deep calling to work with new families during this life-changing transformation, this course is for you. Learn more at newbornmothers.com. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Yeah, so tell us about how that experience of songwriting helped you to, you know, understand what you were going through and connect with people, because that sounds like a really big part of that journey for you.
Connecting with other mothers.
Yes, and that experience that you realize that everyone else is having similar feelings.
So I released the first single, Fear to Feel, which is really fun, and it's about desire, and I made a video clip for it back where I lived when I was in my 20s. It's kind of about sex and going to a house party and wondering if the person that you are into is there, and I filmed it in my brother's flat, and so that's a really fun song. It's also got this like thrum of a snare drum in it, which is like a thrum of desire. So I released that in December, nothing to do with motherhood. And lots of people wrote to me and were like, that's so cool, I really enjoyed that. I've got a podcast called Taunts where I interview women and diverse voices, and another one I do with my husband called Suggestible. So lots of those listeners were like reaching out. It was super fun. But then the rest of the album I decided to release in February as a whole piece, because I wanted it to tell that full story of a transition from that girl in her 20s through motherhood. And the themes in it are things like relationship breakdown. There's, you know, like All Kinds of Lovely, which is this like really joyful song about how I see my kids and they walk into a room. There's songs in there, one's called Thread, which has lots of different themes, and it's quite mysterious, but I think really is about everyone watching you as a mother and keeping score and you feeling like you're being constantly judged. In a way. So, you know, there's lots of, and I've touched on other songs in there as well. What I think once I released it all happened was it started with the women in my community and my friends who listened to it and wrote to me and just said, I felt so seen. It was one of my friends said that to me, a few actually, and I cried through the whole thing and I feel so seen. And that blew me away, and I just thought, well, that's lovely. And I made this for me, but the fact that that's made other women feel seen is really beautiful. But then when I released it in February and did that live show that I talked about, the reaction just blew me away. I was not prepared for that at all, having not sung in so long. And then just sitting with friends of mine afterwards, one of the things in it is A, how much we love our kids, but B, how much women lose their identity and aren't sure of who they are anymore. And that piece about understanding that actually, yeah, it takes, what, 7 to 8 years to move through matrescence. So your brain is different. You are different. If we're kind of told that before we go into it, at least we'd have some heads up. Like adolescents, we're expected to not know what's going on. We're expected to have all these heightened emotions and not, you know what we want to wear anymore, and our body's doing things we don't understand. And so a lot of women kind of resonated with that too, because that had blown my mind when I found out about the word matrescence. And then the other thing that happened was that people started kind of saying to me, I used to be a dancer and I loved it and now I don't do it. Or I used to write and I write poetry, but I never turn on anyone or show anyone. And that's probably the biggest piece for me, other than, you know, people feeling seen in those songs and the pain they've been through being recognized. It's also understanding that as a mother, you're allowed to be creative. You're allowed to find something that lights you up. You're allowed to have space just for you. There's a beautiful book called The Divided Heart where creative mothers talk about what it's like to have kids and also make art. And often in our culture, I think we can feel guilty about taking that time for ourselves. But actually now so many women I've met who are creatives talk about that kind of joy of like sneaking away to do it, or, you know, their kids seeing them as a whole person making something. And I've found that there's been that reaction too, that women in my life have gone back to dancing or back to writing or also back to singing or going to get guitar lessons or pottery or whatever it is. Because I think creativity is really undervalued as a way of caring for our mental health as mothers. So that's been really beautiful. And yeah, I've ended up in regional Victoria singing to women in like community halls. And then I got invited to go to London. And so I did that tour. I did, 11 shows across 3 weeks. And then a show in Sydney, a woman, Ariane Beeston, who's releasing a book this year on perinatal psychosis and her story. She's also a beautiful contemporary dancer and a psychologist. And she sent me a video of her dancing to my song Self over Instagram. And it just blew me away. And so then we performed together in when was that, in July in Sydney, which is so special to have that connection, sort of an artist meeting another artist. Even for me to say that I'm an artist is like really wild to me, but it's just been the biggest joy. So I know I've just rambled away, but that's kind of, I think, the thing that I've loved the most about making this music is seeing other women's art and creativity popping out in all different ways.
Yeah, not just seeing, but encouraging as well. I think it's really, it's kind of sad, I guess, that we live in a culture where you sort of need permission to do your art like that. You know, I was thinking, you know, like when we were back in hunter-gatherer cultures, we would have made everything with our hands. You know, it wouldn't have been a separate part of life. Like you would have just been like weaving and carving throughout your day, like to do everything. And now it's like seen as like something that's a bit self-indulgent or unproductive. And so we kind of need to be encouraged to do that again.
I completely agree. I also think people, particularly around singing and music, we have this weird culture of competitiveness and productivity, and it has to be because it's going to be the best album or you're the best singer. And even like shows like The Voice, it's pitting people who sing against each other and saying, well, you're the winner, you're the one that gets to do this. When actually, like, I went to Fiji last year with my family and they're all just singing and playing bad guitar as we turn up, because just as we walk, just as we run, just as we eat, just as we sleep, we also all have a voice that sings and vibrates, and we all feel really good using that. It's so good for our vagal nerve to do mantras and meditation. It doesn't matter whether or not anyone else thinks it's any good. it should just be a way of being in the world. And I think that about, things with our hands as well. We're creative beings at heart. So part of our mental health struggles too is that block around creativity and just generating things, you know, rather than screens all the time. And I definitely think for me that was the reason why I stopped singing. I did classical training in my early kind of years and AMEB exams, and that's great for some people, but for me I felt like the whole focus was on the wrong notes. And so if you got the note wrong, then it was, you throw the rest of the song away, like you're not good enough. Maybe we'll give you a B or a C, rather than just focusing on the joy and the love of it and the collaborative kind of approach to music, which I think we should have more of. Because so many people say to me, oh, I love singing but I can't sing. But that's just an oxymoron. You absolutely, everyone can sing. I mean, some people maybe have a voice that people want to listen to more than others, but also it doesn't matter. You know, we should be just doing it because it feels good rather than whether or not, I don't know, you'd win Australian Idol, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. For my book, I interviewed some Noongar elders here and asked them about some of their birthing and postpartum traditions. And one of the things that the women mentioned to me was that they would sing. And I was like, what would you sing? And she's like, oh, we don't like have a written song. We just sing as we're working. We'd be like, we're digging a hole. We're digging a hole. We're feeding the baby. Like, it wasn't like a scripted performative thing. It was just like, oh, we just sing what we're doing all the time.
Oh, I love that. Oh my God, that is me to a T, my poor family. I just like love singing. Even if life would be a musical, there's an episode of Scrubs where it's just a musical. They wake up and everyone has to sing to each other. This is my favorite thing. Yeah, because it's a way of understanding the world. That's how I see it anyway. Language to me is the same, just like talking it out. And it's so in the moment then. And it's not wrong or right. That culture, our First Nation culture of being really present, doesn't surprise me at all. I worked up in the Kimberleys, in a community there, and there were chairs under trees everywhere overturned. And for a while I was like, can someone just clean these chairs up? It's really making a bit of a mess. And then I realized it's just because culturally the community would follow the sun. And so they just wanted to have chairs wherever they could, under trees or wherever, so that whenever they needed to sit down, they could, to chat, you know? And it's that being in the moment and in the stillness, which I think is to me why those songs came to me when I was really still too, because how much do we really get to do that in this culture of fast-paced, you know, always have to be occupied? Whereas I felt, to me, songwriting is like a spiritual process. It's meditative. The songs kind of come sometimes fully formed, sometimes not, but there's a quietness to songwriting that is so sacred to me, actually, for want of a better word. It's like my spiritual practice. It's a way of understanding and processing what I'm going through. Whether or not anyone hears it is another thing. But,
So without putting any pressure to be productive on you, but I'm wondering what you feel might be next.
Oh, that's a good question. So I'm writing another album. I'm taking my time with this one. My friend Sean said to me, the difficult second album. But I think it's more a case of wanting to spend the time with it. I'm also working next year on touring my show more. So I do this show as a complete 11 songs with storytelling. And so I'm playing next year at Newcastle Fringe Festival. I'm planning some more Fringe Festivals and some more shows in regional Victoria. And I'm currently working with a music therapist to develop a workshop where we do a couple of my songs as journal prompts, and she teaches melodic mantras, and we do those with babies and mums. Because a lot of what I'm trying to do is develop shows that are accessible for mothers. So 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon seems to be a really good time. It's outside of kids sport and times where families can come and you can bring your baby, but it's not a kid's show. It's a show where they might enjoy the music, but you'll get something out of it too because it's storytelling, as well as singing about motherhood. I often have art supplies around as well, so sometimes women will end up drawing during the show because I don't like to sit still all the time. And they always have seats available and, you know, accessible bathrooms. So often the music industry, your favourite artist might not come on until 10 o'clock at night. So I'm trying to develop shows like that, which I did this year. Yeah, so that's me for next year, is more shows of Matrescence, writing a new album, working on a new season of my show, Tonce, because I couldn't do it this year after all the touring and parenting. But I think the biggest challenge for me, and I don't know if anyone else resonates with this, is not burning out, not overdoing it. I'm trying to learn that lesson. I think I didn't really learn it that well this year. So I'm trying not to take on, as someone who runs their own business, I'm sure you can relate to this, the balance of wanting to really do a good job and all the ideas that you've got, you want them to come to fruition, but also I don't want to end up exhausted and, you know, all of that. But so they're the things I'm currently working on.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a big part of what we teach in the postpartum education care professional training. We have 12 modules and one of them is on sustainability. Making sure that we're doing this work in a way that means we can keep doing this work. So, yeah, I think that's very common, particularly for mothers to, you know, feel like it's a bit all or nothing rather than, you know, why don't we just do a little bit of this and a little bit of that? And the pace will be a bit slower, but, you know, we'll be around for a long time.
Yeah, that's 100% it. I actually am really excited. I think this time around I'm going to release songs as individual stories. And one of the songs I've written is on miscarriage. So I experienced one in between my two kids. And so I have this kind of dream I'm working on at the moment of crafting it to have a big group of women singing it with me. And so I'm spending more time kind of planning out instrumentation and working on, because just, I guess, more themes around motherhood and conversations that I don't necessarily think we always have or talk about. And I think expressing them in art and in music is another beautiful way of entering into something, maybe in a gentler way, I don't know, or a different way anyway. And I think there's so much power in art to be able to do that. So I'm kind of excited for doing that, but not rushing it, taking my time. It should be good.
I love it. That's beautiful. So if people want to learn more about you, they can go to clairetonti.com. We'll pop the links up in the show notes. Is there anything else you want to close with?
Just thank you so much for having me. It's been really beautiful. Instagram is my sort of social media of choice. So there's clairetonti.com or at clairetonti. And you can find me on Spotify as well. And all of my album, actually, you can purchase it as a digital download from my site directly. And there's a digital lyrics booklet that my friend Annabelle Warren created for me. Each song has an artwork and a symbol to go with it. This mother thing has the lotus flower. And you can see the front cover design too is me with an open heart. And that digital lyrics booklet is really special, particularly if you're someone that works in the motherhood space. Quite a lot of women that I know are now using my songs as journal prompts or playing them in their women's circles and in their kind of sessions with mothers. I have a friend who's also a masseuse that works a lot with mothers, and she plays some of the music too. It's got kind of ambient sound in the background. So there's kind of different tools that you can use the music for. The other one is Lullaby. My friend, there's a woman I met in Exeter who uses it to put her little baby to sleep because it has rain on the roof of the in the background of it. It's the original voice memo that I created it for. So she finds it puts her daughter to sleep. So if you you need another strategy, you can always give that a go. Other than that, I'd love to see you at a show if anyone's listening and is curious. I might be around in your area. So there's an events page at Claire Tonti, and reach out if you would like me to come and play at a women's circle or a retreat or a workshop. I've started doing that too and I'd love to. So you can contact me on Instagram is the best way, I think.
Beautiful. Thanks so much for sharing with us, Claire.
No worries. Thank you.
Here at Newborn Mothers, we believe that every family has the right to high-quality postpartum care. If you want to join us, learn more at newbornmothers.com. And if you like this podcast, we'd really love you to leave us a 5-star review and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.